We'll carry on the Rain legacy in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of August 1st, 2014, this is the Rain Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. In our last episode, we learned about the early history of Collins Radio. This week, we'll hear about the so-called Legacy Kenwood equipment from former Amateur Electronics Supply, AES employee, Jeff Cavelli, WA8SAJ, who repairs various commercial ham gear from the 70s. At the 2014 Dayton Hamvention, he talked about the history of Legacy Kenwood equipment.
I'm Jeff, WA8SAJ. I worked at AES in 73. From 73 on, Kenwood really got rolling. Kenwood actually started as Trio. Three brothers started the company. Started out originally with one set of curves. And as the company grew, they added more. Well, then they ran out of curves. About that time, things were starting to really move. They were actually moving into other products, making products for Lafayette. And I'm jumping the gun a little bit. Allied Radio and R.L. Drake. Actually, they made some of the Drake stuff in the 70s. The 2-meter radio, the TR-22, which was the Kenwood TR-2200, TR-72, which was the Kenwood TR-7200, the Marker Luxury, and the SSR-1 shortwave radio, which was a Wadley loop type 0 to 30 megacycle. I'm old-fashioned, by the way, megacycle radio. Later on, Kenwood came up from two names. Don't know the exact part of the Kenwood part, but they wanted to Americanize the name. And at the same time, they were trying to find a distributor large enough on the West Coast to distribute their products. And Henry Radio was the only one that could do it. This is their first radio that they made for Allied Radio. You know, Allied Radio Shack, but it was Allied at that time from Chicago. This is their, TS-500, 511, actually 500 in a little different form. Tube output, obviously, power supply, speaker. They sold this for about 2 years. I remember I was in the Navy, and in 1970, I was going to school in Memphis, Tennessee. But prior to that, I went to the local Radio Shack store, and he says, oh, by the way, there's an Allied store right down the road, and they're selling ham gear. I go, what? So then they were selling this to the Allied name. This is the first ad from Henry Radio. They had three stores on the West Coast, and they didn't distribute them to other dealers until later, the Twins. 599 Twins, which actually were made in 69, but by 70, they actually had the Kenwood name, and they actually used the Kenwood name when they brought them over. I'm saying this because there's a change down the road here. You'll see here in a few years. By 71, they were really promoting the Kenwood brand. All of a sudden, you start seeing dealers, Amateur Electronics Supply, AES, Milwaukee. I worked for them in the Cleveland store, but they were starting to see them being a distributor, selling to dealers. So they were upping the price a little bit, but still it was cheaper than some of the American products, and that's how they got moving, and they were really moving this line. Now that radio you saw before, by 71, they actually upped it, and they put some more features into it. This is the 511 here, and I'm trying to remember the price. It was around $500, remote VFO and speaker and a power supply. By 72, brand was still moving. Dealers were growing by leaps and bounds. People wanted these twins in particular because they were so small. Power supplies built in. You didn't have to have an external supply. You only had to have that special cable with the special connectors that you can't get anywhere unless somebody knows where you can get them. They were really a nice radio. This radio, the TS-900, was out for about 2 years. Came out in 73, the year I started AES. I remember because it was around Christmas of 73. And they only made this radio for about 2 years. This was actually a pretty nice radio, and if you look at it, it kind of looks like a Henry Temple 1. And by the way, the Henry Temple 1 was made by Yaesu. Henry was selling that also at the same time. So to compete with Yaesu, because they were bumping heads, they came out with this radio that kind of looked like a Temple 1, but upped it a little bit with a nice remote VFO and a lot of bells and whistles, typical of their Kenwood product. And remember, they made a lot of stereo equipment. If anybody was in the Navy or in the Air Force, everybody wanted to have Kenwood or Sherwood or whatever. So this 900 was actually a pretty nice radio. Also, late 73, thanks to the truckers up in northern Ohio and Pennsylvania and Indiana, they shut down the whole country with their trucker strike and the CB boom became a big thing. This actually helped Kenwood and Yaesu and everybody else, including Drake, on growth of radio, not just CB. We're talking radio. Kenwood stuff we couldn't keep off the shelves. I mean, they were just moving. We were moving inventory every month. That's hard to believe. By 73, the A model came out of the 599s, so they upped it a little bit. I think they brought some of the controls out, made things a little simpler. And in 73 also, to compete with the FT-101, the 520 finally came out with built-in AC and DC supplies. That was the cat's pajamas there, because they could compete with Yaesu with their 101. It was really a pretty nice radio. No plug-in boards, but they always use those wire wrap stuff, the stuff they use in their stereo equipment. You guys are probably familiar with that. They do go bad, by the way. You might want to solder them sometime if you're having an intermittent problem. It'll drive you crazy. But the wire wrap tool actually for production was very fast. The 900 was still going around along with the 520. They were still selling the other hybrids. Their dealer network all of a sudden grew. So by that time, Henry Radio was really pushing the product to other dealers, and the stuff was just rolling off the shelves. 520, hot seller, really hot.
You're listening to a 2014 Hamvention Talk by Jeff Cavelli, WA8SAJ, a former AES employee and restorer of various ham radio rigs. We'll conclude this excerpt from his talk on the history of legacy Kenwood equipment in a moment. This is the Rain Report, heard Saturday nights across Chicago on the 220 Good Guys repeater on ham radio's best-kept secret, the 220 band, 224.52 megahertz with a 110.9 PL. We'll be right back. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
By 75, they were really promoting the product. Still had the 900, but that was kind of on the back burner. The 520 was really kind of taken over, because with the 520, you can get transverters, you can get the remote VFO, you could have a balls-of-the-walls radio with the 520. If you remember back then, if you look at the old catalogs, boy, that thing was loaded with options. In 75, a major announcement by Kenwood, or Trio in Japan, they changed their format. They dropped Henry Radio completely. Just dropped them. Henry Radio had all these 520s, tons of them. So what they did, they engineered a 520 with a digital readout. Actually, AES bought a ton of those, and we sold them. God forbid I had to repair it, because there was no information on it. Henry Radio would put the readout in, sell it to you. I think they upped it about $100, so you could get a readout built right in. So Henry Radio was able to get rid of all their 520s by putting a digital readout right in. And that was before the Henry Radio redid their distributorship, and they made a new building and everything in 1980. Because they were building amplifiers and that. Fortunately, the amplifier business saved Henry Radio, because they could still sell to the government, and they had a lot of government contracts. Anyway, Kenwood went direct. They called themselves Trio Kenwood. By 75, they decided to up the 599s. They were still selling, but not real well. They decided to make the D models. This was a big change, and we started selling these again a lot more when we came up with the D models, really sharp looking. In 76, I remember, because 76 was a big year for Kenwood, you'll find in a minute. 76 was a big year. Remember, the CB boom is still going crazy. This stuff is just flying off the shelves. Their 2-meter gear, VHF was a big thing, all mode, and they were really moving along, and they're selling direct. They actually had their own sales force. They had a service department, and Mickey Attori, who was an engineer, came in, and he was their service manager. AES was one of the major service centers for Kenwood. They would only give us 2 hours labor for credit, but that was better than nothing. Yaesu would give us free parts, but no labor. You have to kind of work with the Japanese if you're going to sell their products. Here's the thing that really changed the industry. In 76, I can remember Mickey Attori flying into Cleveland, because the Cleveland store had the very first 820 AES. He was a 13-year engineer. He helped develop the 599 series, 820, and 520. That's why he delivered it, because he was actually one of the guys that was on the 820. I met him at the airport. I drove him over to the store. We set that thing up, and people were just rolling in it. They didn't know what this thing was. And, you know, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have cell phones. People were just wanting to see this thing. No digital readout, by the way. That was an option. The TS-820 came with no digital readout. We had to put them in. The dealers did. But after a while, that changed real fast. They debuted this in 1976 at Dayton. And it took the industry by storm, and even Yaesu kind of took a pause and says, ooh, what's that? That's pretty neat. Because this readout also read all the three frequencies, your carrier, your VFO, and your heterodyne oscillator, so it was pretty accurate within 100 cycles. And it was nice looking. They actually made a receiver. They called the R820, but that came a little later. Also in 77, a year later, the 520S came out. They dropped the DC supply, put in the three frequencies to read the accuracy within 100 cycles off the DG5 digital readout. I believe they added 160, and I think JJY. I think you could add a CW filter, you could select it or something like that, minor stuff. Pretty accurate. For a capacitor-tuned VFO, both Yaesu and Kenwood did pretty good for a 1KC readout, and that was about as accurate as you could get. But the 520S became, again, a big seller, because it was a low-end version of the this 820, because the 820 wasn't real cheap, but it was a nice radio. Now, that was 77. Now, in 79, Kenwood announced their 120 and 180. 180 was kind of their Cadillac radio, supposedly, but it only lasted about a year and a half. They had more problems with that. It was kind of engineered. It was an up version of the 120. And there's actually three versions of the 120. These are all solid-state radios, handband only. The 120 was updated because they had a lot of problems with the PAs. That was the biggest problem with solid-state. Both Kenwood and Yaesu were struggling with PA amplifiers staying working correctly because high SWR, foldback circuits. Drake had the same problem with the TR-7. So did Collins and Heathkit, and everybody had the same problem. Everything went into thermal runaway. But the 820 and 520s were still selling like hotcakes. Yaesu had the same thing, too. And I'm only comparing Yaesu a little bit because these guys were competing head-to-head. And everybody says, well, where's ICOM? ICOM didn't have an HF radio until 77, the IC-701. Mr. Inouye from ICOM, who was the president at the time, had a radio that was all solid state, and it blew up at one of the Japanese shows, and he got out of the HF business entirely for a number of years. That's why Kenwood and Yaesu just kept moving up, and ICOM was only making 2-meter gear and VHF gear. They also had a no-code license there that expanded, and they could sell a lot of products versus HF. In 1980, they went back to the hybrids. Kenwood had the 120, the 180, and Yaesu had the FT301 line. Again, the PAs were having a lot of issues, so they were losing some sales. TR-7 had come out already. Heathkit had come out with their radio. Collins had come out with the KWM-380 solid state. And guys were starting to get the itch for maybe no tuning. So they decided to go ahead and go back to hybrids. So they actually pulled out for a while and then went back and they upped the ante with the 830. This was a real successful radio, as everybody knows. Very, very nice. And they actually had some different versions as they went along. By 81, they actually said, well, let's take some of the features down. Basically, the 430 was the end of the production hybrids. 5 years of Drake running with their TR-7. They announced their TR-7 in 77, 78. Kenwood had another radio. It wasn't the 180. It was something similar to this, but not general coverage. And they packed up and left. So whatever they had new, which they thought was going to be another radio, which was solid state, up version of the 120-180, I remember them packing everything up and just walked out because they just couldn't believe that Americans could come out with a radio that would blow them away. Even Mickey Ettore says, I don't know how they did that. But then what they did, they took the TR-7, they went with a high injection IF, no RF amplifier in the front end, broadband tuning. They put AM, FM in there. FM was an option. They dazzled it up, as they usually do, put some memories in it. It was a very successful radio, but that was the end of the hybrids. But this was kind of the TR-7 killer. The 430, I hate to say it that way, but that's what happened as far as the industry. And about that time, I left AES. Kind of sad to see in a way, but the 440 and 450s came out later.
And that concludes our excerpt from a 2014 Dayton Hamvention talk by Jeff Cavelli, WA8SAJ, a former employee of Amateur Radio Electronics in the 70s and repairman and restorer of Drake, Swan, and other ham radio gear of that era. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2014 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.